Amen. Genesis chapter 42. And Joseph's brethren, or his brothers, they have come to him. He's now the governor, really the prime minister, in Egypt at this time. And his brothers come to him. They're looking for corn. And they begin to talk. And then in verses 14 and 15 of Genesis 42, we read that Joseph said unto them, "That is it that I speak unto you, saying, ye are spies. Hereby ye shall be proved. By the life of Pharaoh ye shall not go forth hence, except your youngest brother come hither." Robert Southey was one of the Lake poets, along with the more famous William Wordsworth. Of course, if you did poetry in English class, you'll probably have heard at least of William Wordsworth. Well, Robert Southey, he was a poet as well at this time. And in one of his poems about the Inchcape Bell, he tells of a bell attached to a buoy off a dangerous shore in Scotland. Of course, you know the old type, whenever a ship would be approaching a harbour or whatever it might be, they perhaps wouldn't see the buoy, but they would hear the bell ringing attached to the buoy. Well, one occasion in a drunken spree, a wild captain, he jumped from his boat and he cut the bell from its mooring in a gross attempt to injure all who would come into the harbour. Of course, his thinking was, well, if there's no bell attached to the buoy, there's no ringing in the middle of the night, then all of the liners, all of the boats that try to make their way into the harbour, well, they will not know where they are going. Months later, the same captain was caught in the midst of a storm out at sea. And of course, as they were frantically trying to get back home, steer for the harbour light, as it were, or steer for the harbour buoy, as it was in this case, the men, his workers on the boat, they were listening intently for the ringing of the bell. They listened, of course, in vain, because the bell had been cut previously by their angry captain, with the result that the ship missed the channel and ended up crashing on the rocks. What happened to that captain? Well, really Numbers 32, verses 23. "Be sure your sin will find you out." That's exactly what happened to that captain. His wrongdoing, well, it had come full circle and caught up with him. Now in Genesis chapter 42, we have another similar set of circumstances. Really the wrongdoing that Joseph's brothers had performed upon him. Chapter 37, they had sold him into slavery. They had sold him to the Ishmaelites, who then transported him to Egypt. Well, that wrongdoing had now come back to bite them. Much has changed, however, between Genesis 37 and Genesis chapter 42. He was just a lad back then. He was really at the end of his teenage years. He was approximately 17 years of age. But now the young lad Joseph has become a man. And as he has become a man, as he's now in his late 30s, 37, 38, 39, somewhere along that type of age, he has had to endure hardship. Remember what happened. In chapter 39, there was temptation brought his way, and he said, "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against my God?" And Potiphar, he wrongly threw him into prison because of wrong accusations from his wife. However, from the pit and prison, Joseph is now being elevated to the position of none other than Prime Minister of Egypt. You read of him in this chapter being described as the governor of the land, really the Prime Minister of the land of Egypt. And providentially, they are now in the midst of a famine. Really, the then known world, it is struggling. There's a famine in Israel. There's even a famine in Egypt. But of course, through the dreams that Joseph has interpreted, Egypt, well, now it became the superpower of its time. They had put away after their 7 years of plenty. And now really Joseph became one of the most powerful men in society in the then known world at this time. He would have been like the Donald Trump of today. He had a position that would have yielded him tremendous influence and affluence in the then known time. But of course, it's been 20 years now since his brothers last saw him. And now providentially, his brothers had heard in chapter 41, there is corn in Egypt. There is food in Egypt. And the command is given to them to go to Egypt, to try and find something in order to sustain them in the family. And interestingly, in chapter 37, when Joseph's brothers sold him into slavery, what did they do before then? Well, they threw him into a pit. And in doing so, they faked Joseph's death. And whenever he had been sold, we can deduce that really in terms of their minds, that was it concerning Joseph. They probably thought that their wrongdoing would never come back to bite them. That their wrongdoing would never be discovered. But the book of Galatians chapter 6 tells us in verses 8 and 9, whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And now this principle, along with Numbers 32:23, is coming back to haunt these men. Now Joseph's brothers are before him. And in verses 15 and 16 of chapter 42, we have them described as being proved, being tested. Here Joseph is now confronting them. He is testing them. He is proving them. And here we find that after 20 years of putting the whole issue to bed, or as they thought, now their sin is being revealed. And tonight, whilst you can conceal sin for a season, it will eventually be revealed. God, he lets you go so far before then stopping you in your tracks. And my friend, don't make the mistake of Joseph's brothers. Some today they feel that because God has never proved me, he has never tested me, I've done something, years, decades, whatever it might be, just because my sin is not caught up with me just yet, that I have got away with it. But my friend, that's never the case with God. Whilst God may settle his accounts seemingly as it would appear late to you, God is never late in settling his accounts. One day the chickens will come home to roost. One day the skeletons that you have buried, as it were, deep in the back of the closet of your mind and heart will eventually be revealed, whether it be in this life or the next. And this is what is happening with Joseph's brothers. Joseph's brothers are now reunited with their brother, who they feel is all but gone and all but disappeared and off the scene. But now Joseph is proving and testing his brethren. He is bringing to light the hidden secrets of the heart. And what he does here is he proves their conscience, or tests their conscience. And what I want to do tonight is see how Joseph is, of course, a picture of Jesus Christ. He's now exalted. He was humiliated, but now he's exalted. Now he's enthroned. Chapter 45 calls him Zaphnath-Paneah. This was his Egyptian name, which means Savior of the world. And so Joseph is a wonderful depiction and picture of Jesus Christ dispensing grace, dispensing corn in this fallen world of ours. And here he is proving his brethren. And so we want to think about that tonight. Joseph proving his brethren. Joseph proving his brethren. And he deals with their conscience. The first thing I want you then to see here in terms of his brother's conscience is that their conscience was abandoned. Their conscience was abandoned. Verses 12 and 13, we read that he said unto them, nay, but to see the nakedness of the land ye are come. They said, thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not. Joseph's brothers had sold him as a slave. They had killed an animal, and they had dipped Joseph's coat of many colors into that animal's blood. They then brought this coat to their father, and their father then made the assumption in Genesis 37, verses 31 to 33, that Joseph must have been killed by a wild animal. And really, Jacob was never the same man again. Jacob, of course, at this, by the time he had Joseph, he was now a converted man. He was called Israel, which simply means prince. He had had that experience in Peniel. God had spoken to him. He had seen the ladder from heaven. Jacob is now a Christian. But when Jacob felt he lost his favorite youngest son, Jacob was never the same again. He was like a wounded dog. And this plunged him into 20 years of grieving and mourning for his son. And as they watched their father's initial reaction, it must have had some kind of impact upon them. I mean, you imagine it. Being the cause of your father's grief. The father who you do love at the end of the day. Blood is thicker than water. And they would have had a love for their father. May they not have agreed with him, placing Joseph over them when they were younger and working for him. But they would have had a love for their father. And as they see Jacob grieving, as they see him plunged into despair, as the bad news breaks, surely this would have had some impact upon them. Perhaps in those initial days, they would have been full of remorse. And the interesting thing is this, when you read Genesis 37 carefully, you'll discover something. That Joseph's brothers actually plotted to kill him. It was discussed, it was bandied about in the meeting, as it were. Yes, they did not decide on that, but they had discussed the possibility of eliminating, exterminating, killing their own kith and kin. And now, seeing their father's disdain, seeing him collapse emotionally, they would have been moved. Undoubtedly, they would have perhaps regretted selling their youngest brother into slavery. But of course, 20 years have now passed. And that initial guilt, that initial feeling of guilt and remorse, it now has all but disappeared. And it's my personal belief that Joseph's brothers now, 20 years on, have actually believed the lie that their father has been led to believe. They have actually come to the place where they believe their own lies. Why do I say that? Well, verse 13, look how they describe their family. Behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not. The youngest with the father is Benjamin. That was the 11th son. The 11th one. They have left him behind. He has not come to Egypt. And one is not. What are they saying? They're saying this to Joseph before them. One of our brothers is dead. One of our brothers is dead. He's all but gone. One is not. In the back of their minds then, they really have washed their hands with this whole incident with Joseph. And I believe they have seared their conscience and they have come to that place where they no longer are troubled by their actions and they just dismiss him as dead, as something in the past, never to be dug up, never to be brought up. He's dead. He is not. And they are in a very, very precarious position. They have abandoned their conscience, their initial guilt, their initial remorse, they have abandoned that now. And they have put the thing to the back of their mind. And with the passing of time, the soft conscience can become a stiff conscience. And you can reach the point where, like Joseph's brothers, the things which grieve you no longer do. Tonight, outside of Jesus Christ, are you there? You can remember a time when you sat in meetings and you were convicted. And my friend, you were troubled about the state of your soul. The fact that you're not right or righteous before God. That you are not, in the words of Amos 4 verse 12, prepared to meet your God. But tonight, you no longer feel that way. Your conscience has been stiffened. Because as you have heard the claims of Christ and the callings of Christ and the wooings of Christ, that with the passage of time, these things, they just no longer have the same impact that they once did. And now you are no longer troubled. What has happened, my friend? Your conscience has become hardened to Jesus Christ. Scripture is full of this teaching. 1 Timothy chapter 4, Paul writing to Timothy and reminding him of really false prophets who are not believers at all. He says in verse 2, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron. And the term seared there, with a hot iron, it has the idea of the branding of an animal. What happens? Well, you get a hot iron, glowing hot iron, and you apply it to the animal. Sometimes to the foot, sometimes to the leg, what you brand that animal, whatever it might be. What happens when you brand an animal? The skin around the branding, it becomes tough. And actually, scientifically, nerve endings are killed. So that there is no feeling at all on that branding. And Paul takes up this thought of that tough skin around the branding of that animal. That skin that has no feeling, that has lost all sensitivity. And he states there are individuals and their conscience is just like this. Having your conscience seared with a hot iron. Their conscience is tough. It's like this. It no longer feels. It's like an old piece of tough skin that hasn't even feeling left in it. You know, the conscience. Dismissing of the conscience and dismissing of guilt can have an adverse effect on someone. In Psalm 32, David was left to shew for a year. And yet in Psalm 32, we read in verse 4, speaking of that event, after he sinned with Bathsheba and committed murder, as he killed Uriah the Hittite, he says in verse 4, that day and night thy hand was heavy upon me, my moisture is turned into the drought of summer. And he speaks of the heavy hand of God upon him, and it was like the drought of summer. And yes, whilst his conscience all the while was left, it had an adverse effect even on him, emotionally, physically, and psychologically. And my friend, if you're trying to suppress guilt, you've been there. You've been there. It can have an adverse effect on your health. It can have an adverse effect upon you emotionally. It can have an adverse effect upon you mentally. If you do not deal with guilt, then my friend, your conscience, it will trouble you at the back of your mind. And I want to suggest to you, that's why we have so many societal problems today. Now, I'm not saying that all of those problems are to do with a guilty conscience. But some of them are. Some of them are. Some of them, people, rather than dealing with their guilt and bringing it to Jesus Christ, they harbor that guilt. They do not deal with that guilt. They suppress the guilt. And it makes them unstable. I wonder, perhaps, is this you this evening? Harboring guilt to the point that you can't sleep at night. Harboring guilt to the point that it has an adverse effect upon your health. The once sensitive conscience can become a seared and suppressed conscience. And oh my friend, there are devastating and debilitating effects of suppressing your conscience and searing it with the hot iron. Is a depiction of Joseph's brethren here tonight just a portrait of your life? You've tried to put things to the back of the mind. You've tried to, as it were, cast them to your back behind you. But all the while they're there. Oh yes, they're deeply buried there, but nonetheless, guilt, as is, it hasn't been dealt with, as it hasn't been put under the blood, it is disturbing you and accusing you. In 1984, an aeroplane flying over Spain. It crashed and everyone instantaneously perished. Whenever the investigators were brought in to investigate the cause of death and the cause of the crash and so on, they found a black box. And this black box was actually a recording from the cockpit moments before the crash. As they listened to, played this box, this speaker back, they listened to the avoidance system on the plane begin to speak to the pilot. It was warning him of an object in the flight path of the plane. And over again you could hear, pull up, pull up, pull up. And the last recording on that speaker was this. Shut up, gringo. And then there was nothing else. What had happened? The pilot had not listened to the warning of that avoidance system. He had turned it off. And moments later, the plane crashed. my friend, learn the lesson of Joseph's brethren and learn the lesson of that illustration. My friend, God is saying to you, as it were, pull up spiritually. Do not suppress those warnings, lest you crash and perish. So their conscience was abandoned. I want you then to see, secondly here, that their conscience was alerted. It was alerted. In verse 7 of chapter 42, we read that Joseph saw his brethren and he knew them, but made himself strange unto them and spake roughly unto them. And he said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. These brothers had been left astray for 20 years with a unstirred and unmoved conscience. But now God begins to stir them. He begins to awaken their conscience. In chapter 41, there was a famine in the land. And chapter 42, verse 1, we read that Jacob saw there was corn in Egypt. He said to his sons, why do ye look one upon another? Do you see what's happened here? Jacob has made the announcement to his boys, his lads, look, we're in famine here, but the news is coming from Egypt. There is corn, there is food in Egypt. And it seems as he has made this announcement, that the brothers all look at each other. Chapter 42, verse 1, why look ye one upon another? As soon as Egypt is mentioned, the brothers, they look at each other in horror. Egypt. Egypt. And all of a sudden, 20 years of trying to forget young Joseph in Egypt, it comes back. Now God begins to speak to them through providence. And I want you to picture the brothers here, and they're thinking to themselves, I wonder what happened to young Joseph. Oh yes, our dad thinks he's dead. But I wonder what happened to him. As we sold him into the hands of the Ishmaelites, as he then went on to Egypt. I wonder, is he still there? I wonder, is he still alive? And as the father Jacob then sends them on this 300-mile trek south to Egypt. You imagine doing that trek. This is probably the first time that those lads have made their journey down to Egypt. And as they're making this journey down to Egypt, they're thinking to themselves this. I wonder, was Joseph treading this path? I wonder what happened to him. I wonder, where did he end up? God is now speaking through providence to these brothers of Joseph. God is now beginning to alert their conscience. Eventually they reach Egypt. And immediately Joseph, he recognizes his brothers. Now they don't recognize him. Egyptians, they dressed completely differently to the Israelites. Egyptians were clean shaven and they wore short robes. Jews, they wore long robes and they had beards. Also, Joseph, he spoke through an interpreter. He feigned himself to be an Egyptian as he spoke to his brothers. So they did not recognize Joseph at all, but he most certainly recognize them. And he begins to speak to them. Verse 9, he actually accuses them of being foreign spies working for a foreign government trying to spy out the land. And he then puts them in ward. He imprisons them for 3 days. He then lets 9 return to get Benjamin and Simeon stay further in prison. So God has not only used providence to awaken their conscience, he now has used a person. And he has also used pain, the pain of imprisonment, the fear of what might happen to them. Now, what was the impact of providence, people, and pain on these brothers of Joseph? Verse 21, they said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear, therefore is this distress come upon us. We're guilty concerning our brother. They're speaking here of Joseph. So providence, people, and pain has led to an alerting of their conscience, where they now begin to feel remorse and guilt over their actions. And this is how God speaks to you this evening. He alerts in these different ways. Providence, people, and pain. Think of God's providence in your life. What does God do? Sometimes he sends, as it were, a spiritual famine, maybe not a physical famine, but we must always be very aware of the timing of certain things. We should never simply leave them up to chance, fate, or coincidence. God is in control of every minute detail of your life. Whenever perhaps you hear of someone passing away suddenly, or you hear of someone coming to Jesus Christ and you hear of the great change in their life, what is that? That is God's providence speaking to you. That is God alerting you. That is God awakening you. Sometimes God brings people along your path. Maybe someone you hadn't seen in a long time. And they come along your path and they maybe challenge you. They ask you a simple question. Sometimes God brings pain. But this is how God begins to disturb 20 years of spiritual slumber in your heart. This is how God moves. When you begin to read your Bible, you see this. Take, for example, providence in the life of Jonah. Jonah thought he had it covered. He had his fare. He went down to Joppa. He then hopped on a one-way Mediterranean cruise. He was literally cruising round the Mediterranean. And yet in Jonah chapter 1, when he reaches that point of giving himself to the sea, what is waiting in Jonah? A large fish waiting to swallow him whole. Providence. God brought the fish providentially along his path. You think of Samson. What was it that caused Samson's restoration? The loss of his eyesight and the loss of his hair. Pain. Think of David when he sinned against Bathsheba. And the Lord let him stew in a spiritual shiver for a year. His conscience, it was asleep. How did God alert his conscience? In 2 Samuel chapter 12, comes to Nathan the prophet, a person. And Nathan comes and points his finger straight at David. Thou art the man. You think of Peter. God used a little girl warming her hands by a fire. She was a Roman. And she immediately recognized that Peter was a Jew through his speech. Job 33 tells us that God speaketh once, yea, twice, yet man perceiveth it not. Do not dismiss God speaking to you. He can speak once, he can speak twice. My friend, don't make the mistake that Job speaks about here. Man perceives it not. He doesn't understand it. Take a moment tonight. Think about providence in your life. Think about people in your life. Think about pains that have been brought about in your life. What is that? What is God doing to you? He is coming and alerting and awakening your conscience before Him. There was a Sunday school teacher. She was trying to teach her children about the conscience, what it was, very, very simply. And she asked the question, what is that small voice that tells you to do right or wrong all the time in your head? One wee lad stuck his hand up and said, my transistor radio. My transistor radio. But my friend, there is the small voice in your head. And it is the conscience. And we are not to shut it out. We are not to suppress it. When God speaks once, yea, twice, He is alerting you and awakening you, just like Joseph's brothers. So their conscience was abandoned, then alerted. Lastly, I want you to see then that their conscience was awakened. Verse 21. Again we read, they said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us. We would not hear, therefore is this distress come upon us. In the previous verses, Joseph, he is speaking about Benjamin. In speaking about their youngest brother, he means Benjamin. He was the next youngest to Joseph. Of course, they didn't bring Benjamin at the request of Jacob initially to Egypt. And so Joseph, he got on well with Benjamin. It was the next in line. He, of course, obviously inquires, what about your youngest brother? What about Benjamin? But when he uses the term youngest brother, again, this is how marvelous God is in all of this. When they hear the term youngest brother, they think about Joseph, not Benjamin. And to a man, we read in verse 20, they said one to another, we are guilty concerning our brother. We saw the anguish of his soul. He besought us, we would not hear. They're speaking about that time when Joseph is begging his brothers
20 years previously, look, don't sell me into the slave trade. Don't sell me to Egypt. He begged them. He was in anguish. And now their conscience is awakened, and now they realize that they are guilty before God. We are truly guilty concerning our brother. And now they are bringing their guilt, who to? Their brother Joseph. They're confessing this before Joseph, the Savior of the world. What is Joseph's response to this? Well, verse 24, we read that he turned himself about from them and wept. He heard their confession of guilt. And he was moved with compassion. Joseph could have cast them off. He could have said, throw them into the prison, lock the key, leave them there to die. But he was moved with compassion. Events transpire. And in chapter 45, verse 15, whenever his brothers all come back, we read, and Benjamin now is there as well, and Simeon and so on. We read in chapter 45, verse 15, he kissed all his brethren, wept upon them, and listen to this, after that his brethren talked with him. He kisses his brothers one by one. He's essentially saying, look, we're reconciled. We have a relationship again. I love the way it's put in verse 15. He talked with them. He hadn't seen them for 20 years. And they had sold him. But Joseph talked with them. And it all started with that admittance of guilt. They were now reconciled. The relationship was restored instantaneously. And he showed compassion and mercy upon his brethren. And surely you see the picture there. Surely you see the greater than Joseph. The one who said in chapter 45 verse 3, he said, I am Joseph. And of course, what does Jesus Christ say? I am the light of the world. I am the resurrection of the life. Joseph here is a depiction of Jesus Christ. You confess your sin. What does he do? Instantaneously, that relationship that was broken and marred at the fall is now restored in him. And he talks with you. He walks with me and he talks with me. A long life's narrow way. That relationship is instantaneously, immediately instated. You're brought into a relationship with Jesus Christ. Hebrews 9:14 puts it this way, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who offered himself without spot to God, purge your conscience from dead works to serve the living God. The blood of Christ, what does it do? It not merely cleanses the soul, it purges the conscience. It gives you a clear conscience before God. Of course, there is a bad example of how to respond to the stirrings of God in the Bible. Of course, you read of a man named Felix in Acts chapter 24. And in verse 25, Paul is before him. He reasons of righteousness, temperance, judgment to come. And we read that Felix trembled. He is awakened, but he answered, go thy way for this time, when at a convenient season I will call for thee. And oh, his conscience is alerted. And he even recognizes in a certain way his guilt before a holy God. Because Paul reasoned of judgment to come. But he states, go your way, Paul, when it suits me. I'll call. And what a fateful place to leave. Will you be like those in Hebrews 9 who Paul speaks of, Jewish converts, who had their conscience purged by the blood of Christ? Or will you be like Felix and put it off? Will you be like Felix and dismiss it altogether and go your way in your sin, bearing the load of a guilty conscience? May the Lord bless His word to your hearts and lives this evening.